Hello, and welcome to the second episode of A Nurturing Pod. We're here over at A Nurturing Mind in Westchester, Pennsylvania. I'm Lisa Green. I'm a marriage and family therapy intern, and I am here with my incredible supervisor, Dr. Zach Alessio.
Thank you for having me, Lisa. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for chatting with me. Okay, amazing. So we are going to jump right in and just talk about your life and what your journey to becoming a therapist has been. How you feel about everything now.
Sure.
And I guess my first question really in thinking about, you know, growing up and growing into the person you are today, what is the first thing you remember wanting to do with your life? What was your first dream?
Probably my first dream was to become an astronaut.
I love that.
And there's maybe still a part of me that thinks that that may come true someday.
Wow.
But I realized soon enough that math and physics was not my strong suit.
So hard.
And so that dream diminished rather quickly.
Like, okay, maybe not. Yeah. And thinking about that dream and, you know, who you were growing up, who, you know, were the most important influential people to you?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Oh, thanks.
It's funny because I would say that family is very important to me, and I, unlike I think some people maybe have idols that they look up to,
sure,
or heroes out in sort of media or pop culture, I really didn't have, or I can't at least remember, specific memories or people that I did look up to. If anybody that's a bit older listening to this podcast, the Eagles or the lead singer,
sure,
of the Eagles, Don Henley, was someone that I really resonated with, his writing, his music, their writing, their music. But I would say family is what kept me grounded and sort of what I was most connected to growing up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm curious with the Eagles, were there any specific songs, any, you know, part of Don that you really connected to?
How long is this podcast? all of his songs, all of
it.
His writing.
Yeah.
Certainly maybe some of the bigger hits that people might know, like Desperado or Hotel California.
Yeah.
But I found that his writing, their music was so relatable on such a human level, sort of like therapy, and it didn't feel overly robotic,
sure,
or professorial,
yeah,
where it wasn't relatable.
Yeah, so. The relatability, that's so important. Yeah, and speaking of, you know, I'm thinking about how you said that, you know, your family was really your core connection, your core root. Who in your family, you know, really inspired you growing up?
Yeah. I probably would say my mom. She has been through hardship, mm-hmm, and has endured quite a bit in her life. And that tenacity to move on and tolerate distress, mm-hmm, I think is quite impressive.
Wow.
So I would say, and my mom and I have always had a pretty close, some might say enmeshed, I'm not so certain about that.
Yeah.
But have always had a pretty close connection and still do to this day.
Wow. Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. What do you think when you think about her tolerating distress, like what do you think gets her through?
Probably for my mom, the, what got her through maybe is one of the characteristics or qualities that got her through was determination, and also caring about others, putting herself last, even if that wasn't always the just or right thing to do.
Yeah, sure.
But sort of that selflessness that others are more important and I don't need to be central, others should be.
Wow. Yeah, that's really beautiful. I think that makes so much sense that, you know, that was inspirational to you and now that's what you do all day, every day.
Mm.
You know, I see that connection there. You know, and I'm curious about, you know, the rest of your family and growing up. Did you have any siblings?
I do. I have one sister.
Oh, okay. I don't think I knew that.
A younger sister, 3 years younger.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. So you're growing up, you're going to school, you're kind of ruling out being an astronaut.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. What other moments do you think led to, you know, you having the thought of maybe this would be an interesting road to go down?
Sure.
Yeah.
Probably so many. I don't know if there was one big moment. Maybe like some others, I really wrestled my own belonging in middle school and in high school.
Oh, really?
And worked to try to find my identity, my purpose, and tried to fit in a number of different areas and venues, maybe some better than others. Mm. But there was a point when, so I had worked a number of jobs and worked in a restaurant bar and I think recognized for a few reasons that the curriculum required to do a lot of white collar jobs was not going to be for me.
Sure.
And going back to the math and physics and things like that, but felt that I was okay at talking to people.
Yeah.
And did that quite a bit. So, long story short, what had happened was I had gone to bartending school at some point, and I was determined that I was going to have my own bar, build my own bar separate somewhere else. I got my bartending license, which I don't even know if the thing is anymore. If that's a thing anymore. I got it down on Spring Garden Street in Philadelphia.
Oh, how about that?
And my mom and I had sort of made a deal. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to go to college. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I got two point something in high school. Mm-hmm. She was like, go to college. So me and my buddy, we sort of go on this trek. We've been best friends forever. We go on this trek to different colleges across the state. A lot of state schools. And this is a funny story that we were just talking about this the other day, that we were going to Shippensburg or Millersville or Kutztown or Bloomsburg. One of those colleges sort of out in the boondocks.
Sure, yeah.
And we thought we knew the way that we were going because we didn't have maps on our phones because we didn't have that kind of technology back then. So we find ourselves lost. So we had to stop at a gas station, buy an atlas, ask a police officer finally find our way to that school. That's just a funny anecdote. Him and I both went to Bloomsburg and we really loved it. We visited Bloomsburg, him and I. We loved it. We said, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
This is where we're going. Failed out of Bloomsburg.
Really?
Yes. Okay. But I took a psychology course.
Yeah.
And I took three courses.
Wow.
An A in psych and an F in the two other courses.
Wow.
So I said, I was still determined to own my own bar and sort of go down that. But my mom was like, give it another shot. So I started taking psychology courses locally. Decided that I went to Westchester and I was like, you know, I think I want to do the psych thing. Got a bachelor's in psychology.
Amazing.
And then continued on, got my master's and then doctorate. And that's sort of how I pursued. So elimination of good options led me to psychology, which was a great option, but was not something that I saw from like a young age of like, I want to be.
You found your dream along the way.
Exactly.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, it's funny. You just reminded me of, did you ever watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel? So good. You know how Lenny Bruce is like, don't be a comedian. If you can possibly be anything else, don't do it.
Sure.
Like, but if you have to do it, if you feel like that's your one true thing.
There you go.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to go back for a moment. It really stuck out to me when you were saying you were working on belonging and finding your identity in middle and high school. What did that look like?
This podcast is rated. No. you know, a bit of trouble. Well, not that too much trouble, but I think really trying to find my place with different friend groups, and I played football.
Oh, very cool.
And that was a place I think that I felt like I belonged. But really just trying to be eclectic in my interests and seeing who would, you know, who, what group I could be a part of. And,
And I'm wondering, you know, if when you started taking psych classes, you thought back to that and it kind of clicked as you could make people feel a sense of belonging.
Yeah, probably. That's a good point. I haven't reflected in that way, but that's a good point, Lisa.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, you're saying your friend who you went across Pennsylvania with, how did you know him?
We've been in school. We went to elementary school, middle school, high school together. He was my best man at our wedding. So we've just been best friends since first grade.
Oh, how cool is that? Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. We were junior year and sort of like, what do you want to do? Nothing really. What do you want to do? Own a bar.
Yeah.
Well, my mom's making me try out college. Yeah. That's probably a good idea. Let's look together. We went to a couple schools and, saw Bloomsburg and we're like, this seems like a good deal. So then we decided to go there.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And then you pivot to Westchester.
Yep.
How did that feel transferring?
Great. Really great. Well, maybe initially, uncertain and maybe worrisome, but I really liked Westchester a lot.
That's awesome.
So I found a place there that, my peers were great. The professors were great. I really liked the culture, the campus. They were sort of in this phase, in the very beginning of phases of building up Westchester. They were sort of demolishing a bit of the older buildings. And now if you go there, it sort of looks like a brand new, all the buildings are beautiful and state of the art. But pretty soon really liked Westchester a lot.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you were there and you started taking more and more psych classes, were there any moments of, maybe finding a mentor, finding, different classmates that really stuck with you?
Definitely classmates. I definitely made some good friends there at Westchester.
Awesome.
And I would say I went to LaSalle for my master's program, and that's where your class sizes are typically smaller.
Right.
Your cohort smaller. And you do more focus work. That's where I found some mentors as far as like adults and professors.
And I'm curious, I think we talked about this months ago, but in the context of, your whole story, I'm curious what made you pick MFT?
Yes, great question.
Thanks.
Great question. I don't know if I have a great answer. I think it was probably, although I'm not certain this is how it worked, probably that I had a colleague at a time that was MFT, and I was sort of like, what's this?
Yeah.
And LaSalle had an MFT program, and, awesome. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. And I don't think I knew, like now sort of being able to describe the different identities and differences between sort of a school counselor, a professional counselor, right. Social worker, a psychologist. I'm certain I was not sure of all of those differences back then.
Yeah, absolutely.
But probably something to do with I wanted to work with families, I wanted to work with couples.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is sort of the pathway to be able to do that more effectively.
That makes so much sense. Yeah. And for anybody who doesn't know, MFT is marriage family therapy. Mm-hmm. And that's so interesting. You say you wanted to work with couples and families and that you knew at that point.
Yeah.
What made you gravitate towards couples and families?
Yeah, probably the own family/relationship distress I faced in my own experiences growing up.
Sure.
And family being central to me and important to me and wanting to, although I wouldn't have worded it like this back then, provide change in a systemic way.
Yeah, right.
Being able to work with, multiple people and couples.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like that's why so many of us get into it, because it's like you want to learn more about your own experience and what could have been different.
Yeah.
I love that. And when you were in your grad program, how did that change you?
it was such a, it was a humbling experience to be able to, you know, practice with your cohort, because you get to know most people in your master's program, unlike your bachelor's. There was a few close friends I made, but 90% of the people that I would be in classes with, especially like, you know, sophomore, junior year, you really didn't know. In junior year, you kind of connected, but, you know, often a lot of the classes in your master's, you would be like, oh, yeah, I remember you from two classes ago, or we're in the same class, or what class are you taking next semester? Let me try to take the same same courses. There is a lot of dialogue about personal life and sort of what everybody's going through. And I think there's a sense of, I don't know if camaraderie is the right word, but a sense of connection with your cohort, with your peers. So it was really humbling to hear everybody's lives and everybody's experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think it was at that point where I started to understand what a therapist was. Like, your bachelor's in psychology prepares you for so many things, but it's so general, right? Yeah. Like, if you have a bachelor's in psychology, you can't
do anything.
Exactly. You can't really do much. You might have a job in finance or pharmaceuticals, or it might not be much in psychology. But that was the time when you're really putting like elbow to the grindstone in trying to find and figure out what a therapist is and what it looks like.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And
it was probably, oh, sorry, go ahead, Lisa.
Oh, no, you go. Okay.
It was probably at that point where the MFT identity was solidified. And for me, was when I was like, this is what I want to do. This is the right licensure track type identity. Because then you were really watching videos, seeing professors role play, hearing about, you know, the eventual internship experiences that we all did. That was like, oh, this is what I want to do.
And while you were in your master's program, what was that first internship like?
So I did do an internship in my bachelor's. I think this is how it worked, is with a bachelor's in psychology at Westchester, you could do one of two things. Mm-hmm. Is you could spend your senior year doing an internship or your senior year doing research.
Right.
And at that point, I wanted nothing to do with research.
Sure, yeah.
Because it was sort of that introduction into like mathematics, statistics, and things that were scary to me. So I was like, is funny now that we're full circle PhD.
Yeah.
But I spent my first internship, and then which I ended up working there, was a clinic that worked with kids on the spectrum.
Right. Yes.
And I have this memory that at that point thinking, I feel like we could do more. In that this clinic was, I learned so much.
Yeah.
From this clinic, and I still remember the director and assistant sort of leadership person there, and they were like, great. We were applying techniques from applied behavior analysis, and it was really like an amazing experience. And I remember thinking, like, how do we involve the families? Like, how do we make change? Yeah. How do we show them? So I worked there for a little bit in the clinic, and then went to some homes to provide the therapy the kids in the home.
And you'd see parents, and you would, would you involve them, or you just think?
At that point, I was a lonely little worker there, so I don't think I had the knowledge or experience or confidence. It was sort of, if anybody knows anything about ABA, it's very pragmatic. It's very instructional.
Like skill-based.
Exactly. It's sort of, this is the guide on how you do things.
And, right.
So we didn't really involve the parents, from my memory, too much.
Gotcha, yeah.
But then I had stopped that at some point because I was always working another job, and then I'd worked in substance use and abuse for a bit, and then for my internship for my master's, I worked in family based, where I spent years
during your master's.
Yes, that's right. It started out off as my internship, and then I ended up working there for years after.
And so, when you say you had another job, was that running the restaurant? Okay.
working with a pool company doing asphalt. I had a number of blue. When you work at a bar, you have ties to a lot of blue collar jobs that really teach you what work ethic is.
Yeah, 100%.
So I would always have some other job that I was doing. But my internship and my master's program was family-based therapy.
Wow. What was that balance like, though? Like, going back and forth between the job and the internship and school?
Yeah, it's so funny. My wife and I were just talking about this a few months ago, and I was like, wow, I just feel so busy. I want to transport to when I was getting my master's, and she looked at me and she goes, what are you talking about? Like, you had no time back then either. You were working like two jobs, right. Your internship, you're going to school full time.
Right.
Although I don't remember it that way. I think memory bias has failed me.
Sure.
But I'm sure it was difficult. But I don't remember it being super busy, although I'm sure it was. For anybody that's done family-based, it's an amazing, amazing experience, and it's hard work.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, I'm curious, when you think back on that time, what do you think was the most enriching, rewarding part, and what was the most difficult part?
The most enriching and rewarding was, I would say, twofold. Is the first, I don't think I realized it at the time, was the connections that I made and family-based. And many of the people I teach family-based curriculum and clinicals and some other groups. So I'm still connected very tightly to family-based.
Yeah.
But many of the folks that I connected with, still friends with today, or still chat with, or still talk to. But I think I took it for granted at the time. But that was probably the most amazing thing, is the folks that I had connected with. And then two, I did know this at the time, is that if you want to become trained as a therapist rapidly, you do family-based. because you're all of the families that you work with in the state of Pennsylvania are on the brink. To get a referral to family-based in the state of PA, you have to, one, is be at a risk for out-of-home placement. So many of the families that we'd work with had a child that was stepping down from a residential treatment facility or a hospitalization of some sort. And or the other side was, many of the families that we work with were stepping up from wraparound services to family-based to try to prevent a hospitalization.
Right.
So the myriad of challenges that you would experience and the severity of those challenges were amazing in being able to sharpen a clinician's tool bag. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, wow. I can't imagine that being really your first placement in grad school. Like that must have been, such a learning experience. Yeah. You know, do you remember your first session ever?
I do. 100%, absolutely.
Yeah. What sticks out to you about it?
It was, I remember being incredibly scared and not knowing what to say or what to do. But I also remember this family because it was a really sad family case that we eventually discharged from, and I'm not quite certain how much progress we made with them. And it was probably one of the most difficult families that I've ever had anywhere, ever.
Wow.
With the lack of resources that they had available to them and the ways in which they were marginalized. But one of the best things about family-based is that the supervision is awesome and amazing, and you get plentiful quality supervision. At least I had that.
That's great.
And your partner.
Yeah.
I was really fortunate, really lucky. I had some amazing, amazing, amazing partners in family-based.
That's huge. Yeah. And what was that like, having someone to be in session with you?
For me, it was great. I think it depends on who you ask. I just had great, great partners that were incredibly gifted and smart, and being able to turn to someone and brainstorm or game plan how you're going to be able to support this family, the caregivers, the system, in a way that feels advantageous to them.
Right.
It's hard to do alone, so having that support, that connection right next to you is a big deal.
100%. Yeah, and so were you in that internship throughout the rest of grad school?
I was.
Oh, wow. And and even after that, right?
I was there for years.
Wow. How long were you there?
I stayed as a clinician for, I think, 4 years. I wish Taryn was here. That's actually where I met Taryn, because she's so much better at this than me.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But then I transitioned to a clinical supervisor at that company that I was at.
Oh, how cool. Yeah.
And then went to another company where I was in a leadership position. But I want to say I started it in 2010 or 2011. And then I stopped in 2000. And this is where I'm going to mess up. I stopped in 2019, I think.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And so
I was at a job before I transitioned to a nurturing mind, but only for a short period of time.
Right. And let's see. So you got licensed while you were at Creative Health?
I did get licensed while I was there, yes.
Wow. And what was that like? Do you remember, you know, finding out that you got licensed?
Oh, I remember exactly where I was.
Oh, my gosh.
I was at my cousin's house.
Oh.
And my wife or my mom, was like a family gathering, I forget. Somebody had, they mail you the results of your test back then. And that was what they did.
Oh, it's so exciting.
And I opened it there. And I remember taking the test. I was not confident that I passed. I studied pretty hard. I remember having like note cards in my in my car. I had like the CD player driving around, like listening to all the study material, and I was not confident that I passed.
It's supposed to be so hard.
Yeah. But I opened it up and I remember, and I was like, oh yeah. And then had all the hours that I needed and applied for licensure.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Wow. And you know, I'm curious, I'm thinking about how you were mentioning that you and your wife were talking about, like, oh, I wish I could go back then. And she was remembering, like, you had no time then. I remember we talked about this, but yeah, just in the context of your whole life, how, if you're comfortable sharing, how did you meet your wife?
Oh, sure. I met my wife at a job that I had before my job with Kids on the Spectrum, job.
Yeah.
And it was a great job because it was part-time, so it allowed me to be at the bar.
Wow. And go to school at the same time.
And go to school, because school was always at night, which was perfect. And this job was only about 20 or 25 hours a week.
Oh, my
And
God.
So I was able to be at the bar a lot, and I was able to be here. But I met, so I worked as a TSS was contracted out to a school in Coatesville.
Yeah, what is a TSS for anybody who doesn't know?
Sure, great question. Yeah. It's a therapeutic staff support person.
Gotcha.
Which basically, you're hired, you're contracted out to work with kids or more than one kid in implementing a specific behavioral plan to help with some identified need that they have.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you met there.
Yep.
And then I'm thinking about back to the beginning, we were talking about family being this core theme in your life. And I'm wondering how your family, how your wife, how that has that support has showed up for you throughout your journey.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Are you, my wife's, I would say if she had to name like what's the most important thing to her, she would also say family.
That's so nice.
So the arrangement of both of our core values sort of meshing really makes it easy to support someone who's trying to balance like family, but also schoolwork, but also your job and, you know, the numerous other responsibilities or tasks that you have. So it was really easy. And we met at a time where that was her first job, or she was there for maybe 2 years before me.
Okay.
And she ultimately ended up a few years later then getting her master's. So hopefully if she was here, she would say that she also felt the support from me when she was getting her master's.
She got her master's in education?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Does she teach now?
She does.
Wow. What does she teach?
She teaches. So she recently, she was in, we joke about this, in that my wife taught in, so she taught in Coatesville and then moved to Kensington, North Philly.
Oh, wow.
And she taught there, I'm going to mess up the years because I'm not good at this, but she taught
so
there for
good.
Like 7 or 8 years.
Sure.
And now she teaches, her certs in K, her certs K to 6, so she teaches in Oxford Area School District now.
Oxford. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that closer?
It's like Southern Chester County, maybe half an hour away from here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool.
I know.
Yeah. So what do you remember, you know, specific moments along, you know, your different jobs, going to school, like where, you know, your wife, your mom, like anybody in your circle really, you know, offered that support? Any like specific moments like that?
I think a lot of encouragement.
That's awesome.
A lot of, it helped that I was insanely interested in the subject matter. And,
yeah.
And I was really, especially in creative health, after a few years, I one of my partners and I, and all my partners, but Kristen, who was my most recent partner, mm-hmm. I felt that we were in such a groove and we were really lighting it up and really doing a great job. And
wow.
it got to a position where we were sort of like mentally high-fiving one another. But I think that really, really helps. And just the encouragement from friends, from family,
awesome.
And also like the interest that people asking questions of what is the
yeah.
You know? And I think specifically with Stacey and I, there was always sort of a conversation in the relationship between how education and counseling or psychology, the similarities between the two and sort
yeah.
of what she was working with in North Philly and the hardship and trauma that she was facing on a daily basis and then the hardship and trauma that I was working through on a daily basis. So there was always
right.
conversations late at night about that.
Wow. Yeah, so you just really showed up for each other. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And did you also live in North Philly? Did you live...
We lived in Philly. Not North Philly. We lived in Roxborough.
Oh, Roxborough's fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Did you ever go to the pierogi place?
It's great. No.
It's
That's
good.
Roxborough?
Yeah.
No.
So good. It's the only thing I know about Roxborough.
I can't believe we didn't go to the... I don't think we went to the pierogi place.
It's so funny. Isn't it funny? It's literally called the pierogi place.
Oh, my gosh. That's what it's called.
Yeah. Oh, it's literally... And they're moving. We just found out. Yeah.
No kidding.
Pierogi place. Sponsor our next episode. No, JK.
Yes. I gotta look this up. Where the
yeah,
pierogi place
right?
is.
No, I'm dying to go. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But that's so cool. And so wait, how long from when you met until you got married and what was that like?
Yeah,
like,
so
realizing?
we met and then we dated for 3 years. Then we got engaged. We were engaged for a little over a year
yeah.
and then got married.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, thinking about like the couples aspect and, you know, the marriage aspect, like I feel like that really clicks in, at least for me,
yeah.
you know, your personal life. How did you know that you wanted to get engaged?
Get engaged, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a number of reasons in how I sort of knew that. But I think probably the biggest was that my wife's kindness was just unmatched.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the way that she cared for others. It was so visible and experiential in the way that I could see that. And I, you know, over time, just feeling like we fit well together, we laugh
yeah.
together.
Important.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Just felt like we really got along in a way that I hadn't gotten along with anyone else. So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes so much
Plus
sense.
Plus, she's Greek and I'm Italian, and I was like, I'd love a Mediterranean girl.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah.
Wait, did you ever go to Greece or Italy together?
We did. We were really fortunate. We went to Italy.
So fun.
2017, maybe, I think. 2017.
Oh, my gosh. Where in Italy?
We went all over.
That's so fun.
We were there for 10 or 11 days. So
wow.
We really got to get like an appetizer of all of the big cities.
We
talked about going back. This was awesome. And then we were planning on going to Greece, and then COVID hit.
No.
So
we're not going. Wait, do you know where in Italy your family's from?
I do. My dad's side is from Abruzzi, and then my...
Alex's family's from Abruzzi.
Is that right?
That's so funny.
Yeah, and then my mom's side's from Calabria.
Wow, very cool.
Which we didn't visit either of those areas because
okay.
there's not any big touristy
sure.
sort, but we've
yeah.
talked about if and when we go back, there are two regions that I certainly would love to visit. I got my master's in it, and there was at some point that I realized, because at my bachelor's I was like, I want to be a clinician. I want to focus my career and dedicate myself to being a clinician. And at some point during my master's, I was like, I think I want to get a doctorate and teach and do research.
Wow. What got you to thinking that?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know. You know, what I would say is, although I don't think I was thinking this at the time, is how can we, you know, clinicians, and the way in which we learn is through literature, is through research, right? And how can I be more systemic in disseminating training and information? And one of the ways is through large-scale research. I don't think I was thinking that at the time. That's what I think now. But at some point in my master's, because very soon after my master's, I applied for a PhD program, and it didn't work out. Yeah. But so I knew it was some point in my master's that I decided that, and my PhD program was awesome.
It was
an amazing experience. Very difficult, but just really, really awesome. And
well, Ray, I was going to ask about the logistics just of finding it.
Sure.
How long of a gap you had, if any, between school?
Yeah. So I won't say who, but I applied to a university for my PhD program. Sure. And I got accepted. And this was right after my master's.
Wow.
And maybe some how do you say that word, Lisa? Naivety?
Naivete, yeah.
Yeah, maybe some...
Naivete.
Yeah. But I was working full-time, and I had gotten accepted into this PhD program. And part of the interview process, was a two-day interview process for this PhD program, was we had got to talk to the students there. And my biggest concern was, how am I going to afford this?
Yeah, right.
This program was a brick-and-mortar school, and all of them said that they got a stipend. That's how they were able to afford. They didn't work. It was a full-time program. You were going to get your PhD in about 4 years, and it was very structured and standardized. There wasn't a ton of freedom.
Individuality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they loved the program, but they had shared with us, because that's one of my questions. It's like, how do you do this? How do you afford it? Work? So I talked to the director of the school at the time, and in essence, what he said is, look, we don't have extra money this year for stipends. So they were pretty confident they were not going to be able to offer any money. So I had to decline. I wasn't in a position where I could stop working and take on a PhD full time. And the program wasn't designed to be able to do both. Mm-hmm. So then I applied and kind of felt like, well, I already got accepted once. And I remember the applicants, and this was also a 2-day interview process.
Wow.
It was a triple. I think there was maybe 10 or 12 people in the first year and the 25.
Oh, my goodness.
And for whatever reason, whether it was something that I did or maybe the school was not happy with me because I declined them the year before, I did not get in that year.
Oh, my goodness.
So then what I decided to do is I said, I'm just going to work full time for a couple years.
Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
I think I started my PhD in 2019 or close to 2020, I think. So I took a large gap between getting my master's and then my PhD. And I'm glad that I did that because it really helped me accumulate so much clinical experience.
Right.
And then just finished up my PhD now.
That's so exciting.
And you asked a really important question, which is something a lot of the folks that I interviewed asked, is sort of my research topic, my dissertation is on grief and loss broadly. And a lot of the interviews had asked, what got you into this?
Right.
And it was sort of a combination of a couple things. In one, there was a period around 2010, 2011, where my family had experienced so much loss. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you took out my genogram, it's X's everywhere in the boxes.
Yeah.
And that really facilitated me thinking about how and why people or how people respond to loss from a family or a systemic perspective. Mm-hmm. And I remember I went to a funeral, my wife's family, and someone really important had passed away. And I saw that they were all gathered around so close.
Yeah.
And made meaning in such an important way. At least that's how I was seeing it. And that was sort of the catapult to I'm getting my PhD.
Wow.
In grief and loss.
Yes. Were you going to get your PhD in something else before?
I knew I wanted to. So there, that was a bit of a process of discovering exactly what I wanted to get my PhD in. Did I want it to be more of a traditional psychology and become a psychologist?
Right. Yeah.
Did I want to get more of a specialty clinical doctorate in, like, as a PsyD or DMFT?
Right.
Did I want to be more of a PhD? And that could be a whole separate process in itself, because the type of doctor you choose has a pretty large impact on what you want to do. And I thought to myself, well, what I really am interested in is two things. Teaching and research.
Right.
So a PhD made the most sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the PhDs related to marriage and family therapy are a bit slimmer.
Yeah.
And I felt that I had the tools, the knowledge, and the skills required for MFT. And I had been doing MFT work for a bit of time, so I wanted to venture into something a little bit different. In my PhD in counseling education and supervision, and then I knew I wanted to research something in grief and loss.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then your experience at the funeral, were you comparing it to, you know, your own family's experiences? And you were saying, like, it's really interesting how each, not only even each person experience to experience, but each family culture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Huh.
And I'd worked with, through my time, I'd worked with, because my original interest was working with caregivers who had lost a child to cancer. That was my original topic. That was based on some experiences, some professional experiences that I had. And long story short, the IRB basically said that's too vulnerable of a population to work with. And one of the things that I like to do is I like to work with populations and challenges that so many therapists turn a blind eye to. I like to work with a lot of suicidality.
Just
I like to work with, right, there you go, Lisa, the high conflict caregivers and family systems. So I felt myself being attracted and pulled towards grief and loss, and especially because there is such a need. And if you talk to most therapists, do you want to work in grief and loss? Not really.
Sure.
So after I had to sort of augment my original proposed dissertation, I felt that there was also a fit and a need with this isomorphic pattern of clinicians and their own preparation, their own confidence, in working with parents who'd lost a child.
Yeah, that's, wow. That's so interesting, right, and so important, and there is such a need. I can think of certainly losing a young child, but I think about in my own life, I've seen, you know, parents lose adult children.
Yeah.
Which is also something that so isn't talked about enough.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what were the things about your PhD program that surprised you? That, you know, kind of taught you new things about, you know, the field, yourself, the world, you know, the human mind, family cultures, anything like that.
How fucking difficult it was.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if all PhD programs are structured in this way. The first part is mirrors, maybe getting a master's or a bachelor's, where it's very class heavy.
Right.
And I'm, you know, chucking away at these, I'm chugging through. I'm ready to get my PhD in 2 years.
Yeah.
By the way I'm going through these. I'm like, got this. A. And throughout that process, you do residencies. And you have like 3 or 4 that you do. And then you transition. I don't think I'm forgetting anything. And then you transition to sort of like a thesis. Sort of a mini dissertation and a proposal, and you do some presentations. But where the incredibly difficult part comes in is inherent in a doctoral degree is woven into the sort of the fabric of what a doctoral degree is autonomy, independence. So you really have to rely on you when getting a doctoral degree. And certainly, you know, there's benefit and like you want to reach out to your support systems, your ecosystem, the school that you're attending, faculty. But at the end of the day, a PhD is your own original research. So no one knows that better than you.
Yeah.
And that was the most difficult part of it, was trying to find time at 3 a.m. on a Saturday or 10 p.m. on a Tuesday to cultivate a dissertation and original research when you're working and you have other responsibilities. That's what I found to be so humbling and so difficult.
And I'm sure, right, especially that it was so many years and just, yeah, staying motivated when you were already working and you already, were you still working at the bar with your mom?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
So you're working at the bar, you're taking classes, you're working as a therapist. I just, did you ever sleep? Like, I can't even imagine.
If my wife were here, she would say Zach doesn't get much sleep anyway, and he's fine with that, which
wow.
is true. Speaking of recent grief and loss, we'll be dead in 10 years because I'm not getting sleep. But I'm lucky in that sense of, like, if I don't get a full 6, 7, 8 hours, I'm okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You can kind of hang till the next day.
Exactly,
wow.
Yeah. I think it teaches you maybe one of my strengths that I've always had or I've sort of cultivated throughout this process is balance.
Yeah.
In that I didn't get my PhD in 3 years or four, you know, right. 4 years is sort of like the quick fast track waiting for most people getting a PhD. And I didn't do it in 4 years. And if I didn't work or worked less, I think I would have been more on that track.
Wanting to do it as fast as possible.
Exactly. So I think I know no one can see this, but there's turtles all around this room. So I was really engaging in the identity of turtling and practicing patience throughout this process.
Is that when the turtle became your spirit animal?
It's a good question. Yeah. I wish I knew the exact etiology of the turtle. I have to thank Taryn for this years ago.
Oh, really?
I think. That's very cool. She either initiated it or jumped right on the bandwagon of calling me a turtle. Because I believe it started at Creative Health, in that people would joke / tease and like, oh, Zach's so slow, like, oh, he's gonna take forever.
Aww.
But I soon harnessed that feedback, and then I think Taryn was the first person to get me a turtle, and then I soon thought to myself, how cute, how delightful.
I think the turtle thing is so perfect because it really represents like how, you know, how it makes sense to be in a session, you know, to take your time. And when you don't know something, to really consider everything you're saying and doing and being intentional, and being thoughtful. Yeah.
It perfectly worded.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No, I remember the first time we met and you told me about the turtles. That was such a cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. And do you bring it up in session?
All the time.
Wow.
All the time.
Yeah, what's that like?
I think the feedback is positive from the folks that I work with.
For you.
For me.
Yeah.
I find it at this point to be such an integral part of my personal and professional identity.
So cool. Yeah.
I've joked in where I teach that I have, and they can see, it's all the classes are video recorded, and most of them are virtual. So I'll have like a turtle behind me, or I'll have a turtle in front of me, for that constant reminder to be slow, be intentional, be purposeful with what I'm saying and with what I'm doing.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's so powerful.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a really beautiful full circle place to begin to close out.
Sure.
I think that's so amazing. You know, you had all of these moments and And yeah, just the balance of it all is really blowing my mind right now. But yeah, so you officially got your PhD 2 weeks ago?
Officially, yes.
How are you feeling now in a reflective moment? Yeah.
Yeah, great question.
Thanks.
Probably not too different. I don't know if the big moment of relief has hit me yet.
That makes sense.
But I am maybe having nightmares of this weekend, how much time I'll be spending. Anybody that has done a dissertation knows that the goddamn editing on this thing, when you're editing 200 pages, you'll put one page break in on page 92 and then forget to check on page 194 that half the document's off.
No.
So that was...
it's intense.
So I guess closing is I'm happy and relieved.
It's so good.
And delighted that I won't be doing... checking my table of contents again for the 400th time this weekend.
God bless. Delighted. I think that's a wonderful word. So, in terms of closing, is there anything else on your mind that has been, a central moment in your journey that you'd like to share?
Probably, but nothing's coming to my mind right now, Lisa.
We can always do a part two.
And thank you so much for doing this. For doing this, Lisa. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much for chatting with me. Yeah, this, and just for being so open and vulnerable and really sharing your story so beautifully. And I think this is just cool because it really shows the different steps, you can take and exactly how you got to where you are now. It shows more about you. It shows more about therapy. I love it. Amazing. And so thank you, Zach. And thank you so much for listening. Yay.